Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Aftermath. Today's guest expert is Dr. Benjamin Zeller, Associate Professor of Religion at Lake Forest College and author of Heaven's Gate, America's UFO Religion. He's also featured in the recent HBO documentary series Heaven's Gate, The Cult of Cults. Let's hear what he has to say. Hi, Dr. Zeller. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So can you start off by giving us some background on the two leaders of Heaven's Gate, Marshall Herf Applewhite and Bonnie Lou Nettles?
Yes. So Bonnie Lou Nettles and Marshall Herf Applewhite, correct? Herf is the person we usually think of. He's the one that lasted until the end, 1997, with the exits. But the often forgotten co-founder is Bonnie Lou Nettles. So they met in the 70s, and a bit on each of their backgrounds. Marshall Herf Applewhite was the son of a very popular Presbyterian preacher in Texas. So he's raised in a very devout religious family. He goes on to seminary, actually, so he studies to be a minister like his father. But his love is music, so he drops out of seminary, and he ends up, he's briefly in the army, but then he goes and gets a master's degree in music from the University of Colorado. And he goes into music theater. He is just a deep lover of anything musical, music theater. He is bisexual. He is out of the closet by the time he meets Bonnie Lou, at least within the musical theater community in Texas, in Houston, where he's living. When he meets her, he is going through a separation. So he was married. He had children, and his marriage was falling apart, not just due to his sexuality, but that was certainly part of it. But he really felt like he was sort of at a crossroads in his life, wasn't sure what he wanted to do. He ended up getting fired from his job. So he's at a loss when he meets Bonnie Lou. Bonnie Lou is a nurse. She has sort of a conventional Baptist upbringing, but she gets involved in theosophy and astrology when she is an adult. So as an astrologer, she believes she can chart the future of her clients. But she's a special sort of astrologer. She is a channeler. So she doesn't do it on her own. She is able to communicate with spirits from beyond the grave who can help her to chart the future. So she is a channeling spiritualist, you would call her. And when they meet, she does the chart for Herf. And she says that we are destined to work together as partners. And that's the beginning of Heaven's Gate. They become spiritual partners based on her telling of his future and her future.
Herf and Bonnie find inspiration for their calling in the Bible's Book of Revelations, the two witnesses. But they're not the only cult to have been inspired by this script. Why is it that this script is so popular amongst apocalyptic cults?
Yeah, that actually reminds me of something that Heaven's Gate, that their members admitted, actually, that Herf and Bonnie Lou admitted. They said they went to this little church in the middle of nowhere in the 1970s trying to make converts. And they said they're the two witnesses. And the minister said, no, the two witnesses were here last week. Someone had beat them to it. So yeah, there were a whole bunch of people. So I mean, what's going on here is I trace it back to this sort of this biblicalism and the success of Hal Lindsey and the late great Planet Earth. So there was a number of different proponents of sort of going through the Book of Revelation chapter by chapter, verse by verse, and ascribing to it whatever the current moment was. So Hal Lindsey had a bestseller called The Late Great Planet Earth, which did this. And he said that when the Bible talks about, you know, the whore of Babylon, it's well, for him, it was the Catholic Church. When it talks about the beast with two heads, that's Russia. When he talks about this bowl of wrath, that's the invasion of, you know, of Turkey by something else. So it's everything can line up perfectly. So there's this deep interest among American Christians in the 1970s about reading the Book of Revelation and interpreting it and applying it to the world around them. People are still doing this. I mean, this is still around. At least for a while, there used to be a website where people would sort of, they would try to sort of line up the Book of Revelation to everything going on right now. It's maybe been displaced by all of sort of the QAnon stuff and sort of the more secularized version. But it's, in terms of the people who are looking for the end of the world, it's an active thing to do. So, they're part of this trend of looking at the text and saying the end of the world is coming. The only difference is they say it's us, as opposed to, you know, most authors say, you know, we're going to read the Book of Revelation and find it all happening out there, as opposed to, yeah, it's us. Because, of course, the two witnesses are destined to be murdered, so that's not usually who you want to identify yourself with.
Right. So, maybe it's part of the 1970s culture. I mean, what is it about this time period that made it such a ripe time for this kind of cult to thrive?
Yeah, well, so part of it is that sort of that rebirth of modern evangelicalism and interest in sort of interpreting the Bible and the end of the world stuff. I mean, that was all running through all Christian culture, particularly in the 1970s, this sort of this new interest in apocalypticism. But at the same time, you also have two other things. You have the emergence of the modern New Age movement, with its emphasis on meditation and self-improvement and purification of the self and achieving a higher level of consciousness, getting in touch with sort of deeper vibrations, all of that language Heaven's Gate reached to. And they said what they were teaching was a method to achieve perfection of that, to elevate your consciousness and your chakras just right off the planet into outer space. There are many paths up the mountain, but they had the path off the mountain was the language they used. So you have the New Age movement. And the other third strand, which combines in Heaven's Gate, is ufology. The interest in UFOs and space aliens, and that was in the 1970s really finally coming to fruition. It had started a little before that in the 50s, was really when it started to hit pop culture. But in the 70s, it was really, it was all throughout. So I think you had all three of those things combining.
Now, there's a lot of speculation that Bonnie was the actual leader of the group, even though Applewhite was more of the figurehead, as we know. Is there any validity to this?
I think so. I've talked to ex-members who've told me that of the two of them, she was the more senior member. That when they would speak in public, he would do most of the talking, but she would correct him if he said something she disagreed with, and then he would defer to her. But I had an ex-member tell me that she was like a spiritual battery. And that she was the one everyone was really running off of. Herf was the flashlighter. He was the, you know, he was doing the show. But ultimately, it's only because they were all hooked up to her, and she was the one that ultimately was the source of it. I would accept this, and I would agree with it. And you see it after her death when Herf elevates her to being his elder member, and comes eventually to see himself as Christ. He says that he's the same being who was Christ, but he's back on earth. And she is the same being that Christ referred to as his father, but she's back in outer space. So she effectively becomes God, and he becomes the Son within their theology.
So how else did Bonnie's death affect Applewhite and the rest of the group?
This is really contentious. So when they're asked in the 1970s, do you have to die to get onto the UFO and go into outer space, the next level, they say no. And they seem to really clearly believe that the UFO is going to come down, they're going to hover, and they're going to get lifted up onto the UFO. You're listening. You can't see my hands. Put your hand up, and you can sort of you can imagine it. All right. So you have they're going to be lifted up onto the UFO. This is the rapture. So if you know Christian theology, the rapture, the idea is that the saved are going to be lifted up, and they're going to meet with Christ mid-atmosphere. Then they're going to fly off to heaven. So in their rapture model, people are the elect, the saved, are literally going to meet the UFO and fly off into outer space. So when Nettles dies, and her body doesn't go anywhere, and there's no obvious UFO to come pick her up, they have to take a more symbolic reading of this. And that's when they shift to beginning to think that maybe it's their consciousness or their soul, they have different words for it, their deposit, that something inside of them rather than their body is going to go into the next level. I see this as the beginning of the end, ultimately. This is what opens the door towards eventually suicide. It's what allows it as a possibility. I know this is contentious. There's ex-members who told me, no, this is not, this was not a change. They had always said it was possible. They might have to leave their bodies behind. I just don't see it in the textual evidence we have. This seems to be the first time they grapple with the idea that they may not physically in their bodies go into the next level.
Wow. So it has been revealed that while she was fully entrenched in the cult, Bonnie was still mailing letters to her daughter and even using money for the group to send to her kids for their birthday. Do you think that that suggests that she wasn't as committed to the group as the other members thought? Was there perhaps a turning point where she might have wanted out of the group?
Well, there's no way of knowing for sure, and we should note that there's disagreement on this. So her daughter, Terry, firmly believes that she wanted out and she just didn't do it. Whereas many ex-members have told me that they thought that she was just, that Bonnie Lou was simply showing compassion and that she was trying to help her biological daughter, Terry. I think ultimately there's no way to know is the answer to this question. I mean, I hate to dodge it, but my reading of it is that she was deeply committed because she stayed with the group to her death. She had many opportunities to leave. She didn't tell her family she was separated and divorced from her husband as well, and she had biological children she had abandoned when she joined the group. She made no effort to rejoin them when she was on her deathbed. She left no instructions to contact them. She left no messages for them. Now, was she just in too deep? I suppose so. I mean, there's no way of knowing. But the most surface basic reading is that she was committed, and that's what she did. And lacking any evidence to the contrary, I guess I'll go with that.
Yeah. Well, the group practiced celibacy and forbade relationships amongst its members. How were these rules implemented? And was there a connection to them and Applewhite's struggle with his or society's acceptance of his sexuality?
Yeah, so Applewhite's, there's multiple layers of this. So first of all, Applewhite did struggle with his sexuality. He came ultimately to reject all sexuality. It wasn't just his bisexuality, his gayness, which upset him. Although that's certainly part of it, living closeted in the 1970s in Texas clearly had pretty severe ramifications. Rather, it was the fact that of all the people in the world he could theoretically date, which is everyone being bisexual, he was unable to work out anything with anyone. And he just found as if relationships on the human level, sexual relationships, were disappointing, were bound to lead to failure. And that's really what he was walking away from, and that's what he taught, and that's what Bonnie taught. Bonnie Lou, who was not bisexual, she was heterosexual. She was only married attracted to, as far as we know, to men. But she had the same experience, that her marriage was unsatisfactory, her family life was unsatisfactory, And that the best thing to do is to abandon their sexuality, to abandon their families, to abandon human romantic relationships, and instead embrace platonic relationships and student-teacher relationships and student-student relationships. So just exist sort of on a level of trying to overcome their humanity. That's what they called for, and that's what they preached. And as far as we can tell, that's what they stuck with. There's no evidence that they ever had anything other than a platonic relationship. There were members of Heaven's Gate who screwed up, who did have sex in or out of the group. They were told this is not acceptable. Some were kicked out. Others resolved the situation. Some left of their own accord. But this was a hard and fast rule. No sexuality. They called it no sensuality. No sensuality. Even to talk about sex is problematic. So don't even say sex. No sensuality. No senses.
Right. And so did this have a connection to... The word is escaping me.
Castrated?
Yes. Jeez.
Yeah, it did. So there were there are different stories about this. All the people who really know for sure are no longer with us. But there were several members of Heaven's Gate who felt as if felt as if maintaining their celibacy was too difficult. That they were having problems with controlling their desires. That they were having wet dreams, that they were having, you know, these urges to masturbate, that they were unable to control their sexuality. And different ex-members have told me differently. Sawyer's recount is probably the best because he said he was there, is that there was a particular member who said he volunteered. He went to Doe and said, I would like to Applewhite. He went to Applewhite and said, I would like to be castrated so I don't have to have these urges anymore. Would you permit it? And Doe said yes, and they did it themselves initially, which was probably not a wise move on multiple levels.
Right. So the 90s were a time where we saw a big emergence of paramilitary groups driven by anti-government sentiment and a rise in religious cults. We had Waco, which was a major one of these. Would you say that Waco inspired or helped revitalize Applewhite's recruitment of more followers? Or how did this have a part in it?
I don't think Waco really impacted the recruitment of followers, but it impacted him in terms of thinking about two things. One is the idea that the government was out to get them, and that the government had failed them, and that they were going to be persecuted, and it enhanced this idea of persecution. The other was he was impressed by the way in which members of the Branch Davidians would rather die than be taken prisoner by a government and forced to recant of their religious identity. He wondered if members of Heaven's Gate, of his group, the class, they called it, would be willing to do the same thing. Members of Heaven's Gate bought into a broad array of conspiratorial thinking. They did believe in UFOs, of course, so they believed in Area 51 and the Roswell incidents and all this stuff, that there was a big government cover-up. So they already bought into the idea of government cover-up, but it became even more intense post-Waco. They believed the government not just was covering up the evidence of UFOs, but was allied with evil forces, with evil extraterrestrials, and was actively trying to persecute the few people who knew the truth about the next level, about the salvific role that you can find in outer space.
In a way, these conspiracy theories, they probably had an effect on them.
Yeah, they definitely did. And they were rooted in conspiratorial thinking. People often ask me, why is it Heaven's Gate is still resonant today? Why was there a podcast? Why is there an HBO series?
Yeah.
Why is ABC is coming out with one next month, I think.
We can't get enough.
I know. Well, I mean, there's a lot going on, but I think part of it is they were so prescient, right? I mean, at the time, people thought this was crazy. They had a website. I mean, who had a website back then? They were into computers. They were into all this this conspiracy stuff. They thought there was, this wasn't their words, but they thought there was a deep state. They thought there was sort of this, you know, that there was the government was out to get them, these conspiracies. You know, this has gone from the most wacky of alternatives to being the right of the heart of the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I think they were really onto something. Yeah.
So how did the internet aid in the cult success? I mean, at that point, it was like AOL and Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they were, ironically, it probably contributed to the end. They really tried to reach out through the internet. They posted to Usenet, which is like a bulletin board system. So only your ancient listeners like me will remember Usenet. It was a message board system arranged by topic. So they posted to topics having to do with science and science fiction, UFOs, futurism, Christianity, religion. And they posted their messages and they were met with ridicule. They were met complete with ridicule. They got one member. Actually, they got two members who joined after their internet posts, but one of them left. So at the end, the 39 members, only one had joined by the internet. But mostly, they met with ridicule. And from what I can tell, this is part of what led them to embrace their exits. Was the idea that they had tried their best, they had reached out every way they could. They had newspaper advertisements. They had meetings. They had a satellite television broadcast series. They had reached out on the internet. They had a website. They had a book. And they were unable to get more than one person to join in, wow, in their last few years using this new internet technology. And I think that's part of what drove them to think that they had to give up on the earth, that they had tried the best they could, that we had rejected them, and their mission was over. They always saw themselves as not belonging here. The metaphor they used was the away team. So if you've seen Star Trek, and I'm a Star Trek fan, so I get this, they call themselves the away team. The away team were the people who left the ship and went down to the planet to do something. But at the end of the episode, they went back up to the ship. So beam me up, Scotty, back they go. So they saw themselves as this. So they were from outer space, they were from a ship, and they were here on our planet to do something. And at the end of the day, at the end of the episode, they had to go back to the ship. And they had always wanted to leave the Earth, and I think in 1997 they were looking for any possible way to mark the end of their time here on Earth, to end their episode, so to speak, to use that metaphor. And they found it in Hellbop.
It's interesting that the internet was actually their undoing, where, you know, we usually connect with the Heaven's Gate with the internet because of their website, because they, you know, were that, but really it was their lack of success with the internet.
Yeah, that's my reading of it. And I remember I ran across them. I read Usenet forums. I was looking at one of it was a Star Trek one. I remember running across it and thinking these people are crazy. And I thought I was not looking for religion to study online. I was reading Star Trek forums, and they were one among many other people who posted irrelevant things, and it was off topic, and it was marked as off topic, and people would ignore it. And I don't know, I didn't post ridicule, but I've read the archives, and I see people did post, you know, ridicule in response. I think you're right. I think it's such a fascinating part of the story.
So you have actually devoted a lot of time and research into understanding how and why Heaven's Gate members, why this cult attracted its members. Can you speak to that a bit? And was there something that they had in common that drew them to Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, they were a diverse group. So first of all, many of them joined in the 70s. So most members joined in the 70s, and then there were a few who joined in the 80s and 90s. But by the time of the suicides, the exits, as they called them in 97, there were people who had been members for 20 years. So maybe they joined when they were young, but they were middle-aged by the time they committed the exits. They were all ages. They were both genders. They were gay. They were straight. They were bi. They were white. They were black. They were Latinx. They were deeply interested in Christianity, and there were others who were not, who were interested more in the UFO angle. There were some who were into sort of New Age practices, crystals and meditations and healings, and others who thought that was frou-frou nonsense. What united all of them was they were seekers. They didn't feel like they belonged in the spiritual religious milieu they were brought up in. They thought they belonged somewhere else, and they couldn't find it until they found Heaven's Gate. Many of them had tried other new religions. They had tried different meditative techniques. They had tried drugs. They had tried communes. They had tried all sorts of stuff. And then they found in Heaven's Gate what they were looking for. So they were seekers. That's the one thing that unites them. And they felt like they didn't belong, and they felt like they were rejected by the planet, and they rejected the planet. They were people who felt as if they just didn't belong. And I think that many of them were people who just didn't fit in. And I think, to me, that's one of the most touching human parts of the story, is that they were people who felt alienated, and they then alienated themselves. Literally, they saw themselves as alien.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were some members who actually didn't participate in the suicide, but continued to have strong beliefs in the aftermath.
What was their thinking
at that point? Yeah.
There are some ex-members who are still very active online, who actually still believe and who see themselves as speaking for the group. And there's others who I'm not sure if they believe or not, but they still speak up, and you can still find them around speaking about their time in the group. This was their family. So for some of the people who no longer are believers, imagine 39 of your closest friends and family, the people you spent decades with, not just have exited the planet, but have been dismissed as wackos, as crazy, as brainwashed, as deluded, as lunatics, as unwanted. Ted Turner, who owns CNN, I mean, when he was asked about this in 1997, he said it's a good way to get rid of a few wackos. I mean, that was basically I'm mangling the quote. You can look it up. I think he said crazies.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was very dismissive. Imagine this is how people talk about the people you love. They speak for them. Some are true believers, but some aren't. But they still want to speak for those who are who they spent time with, their family, effectively. There were some who left. So there were several ex-members who were still believers, and they also committed their own exits, in some cases months, in some cases years after the main exits.
Finally, at the end of the day, we have to ask this question. If you had to pick one person or thing, it can be a concept, that is to blame for Heaven's Gate, who or what would that be?
Ooh, interesting question. For the founding of the group, or for the ultimate, for the exits?
I think for the exits.
It's a great question, because the only people who know for sure aren't with us anymore. It was Hale Bopp that precipitated the end, the sighting of the comet and the claims that there was a companion, a UFO behind it. But the only reason they took that seriously is they believed in conspiracy theories. So when people called into Art Bell and said, NASA is covering this up, that there's secretly a planet-sized UFO following the comet and the government is keeping you from seeing it, they believed it because they believed in conspiratorial thinking. And I think that's it. I think it was their conspiratorial thinking, the fact that they bought into the idea there were nefarious forces working beneath the surface of the government, of society, of television, of culture, of media, of religions, that were controlling things and actively working against them. That's what did it. And do I have to get too presentist and political?
No, that's a perfect answer. In fact,
let's just leave it at there, right?
We were circling around that, but you know, I just think it's so interesting. It makes it so relevant to today, and I think that's why we're so fascinated, really.
And I think you're right. That's what's fascinating. What makes Heaven's Gate? What's kept me studying it though these 20 years? These are peaceful people. These were people who were deep believers, but ultimately. They were individualist, very individualistic in that way. For them, it was about their individual metamorphoses. That's what they called themselves, human individual metamorphosis. It was about their transformations. But they were kind people. They were people who saw themselves on a journey, and they wanted to share it with the people around them. And the conspiratorialism we have today is of a much darker, more violent, frightening variety than what I see in Heaven's Gate.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Zeller, I'm so glad we got to talk to you. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure. It's always fun to talk Heaven's Gate and UFOs.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Amanda. And fact checker Chris Smith.
Call me Fa.
Fa? Oh, I see. Because of the Do-Re-Mi.
Do-Re-Mi-Fa.
Who do you want to be, Amanda?
Sol-La-Ti-Do.
I guess I'll be me.
I was going to have me. Okay, you can have
we
it.
You can both be me.
Me,
you know what? You be me and I'll be Mimi.
Fa, si, do, do.
That's beautiful, Chris.
Nice voice.
Thank you.
Now, what about Dr. Zeller? I mean, I'm so glad we had him on the show. He was awesome.
That was a great get. We were very lucky he took the time to talk to us, and he made some great points.
Excellent points. Guys, the first thing I thought of, I have to come out of the gate with this. Like, I'll throw the suggestion out there like a comet. We missed Hale Bopp.
I know. How did we miss screaming? You know, I had to say it crossed my mind, and I just like forgot to bring it up in the episode. Like it did. It just like the comet flew across the sky. It flew in and out of my brain while we were recording.
Amanda, you're an excellent engineer, but as a producer, honestly. There's a little bit something to be desired.
Are you talking about? I'm the one who didn't even bring it up. I mean, I think we got a little too, involved or too focused on the fact that Amanda was an Art Bell fan and then kind of forgot about the comet.
Hale Bopp, yeah. There's so many monosyllabic words, too, that we had to deal with. There's do and tea and art and bell that hail and bop just slipped through the cracks.
I don't see that, Chris.
It was an oversight, but that's why we do the Aftermath episode, yeah. So we can correct. And so, yes, yeah. I definitely wrote down hail bop.
Yeah. I also, there were a few things that I think we left out, but the two that are, at the top of my list are self-improvement and the New Age movement.
Yeah.
The 70s. Modern New Age movement.
I mean, that was such a big part of why this Heaven's Gate was thriving, mm-hmm. at the time that it did. And another thing I wrote down was Bonnie Lou Nettles' death. Dr. Zeller said it was the beginning of the end because no UFO came. So if she hadn't died, we were like speculating, well, maybe she wouldn't have let it happen or who knows what would have happened. But if she hadn't died, then they wouldn't have had that doubt.
Right. We were on the right track, but for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Yes. As always.
As happens often.
But at least we're on the right track. Now, he called Bonnie the spiritual battery. So I thought that was really interesting and also showed why after she was gone, they sort of had nothing left to sustain them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a, yeah, not only did the UFO not come, but there was a gap. There was a void. Loss.
And speaking of that, like it just is becoming more and more clear that this whole situation is all about connection. And these people who, as he said, which I also brought up in the episode, were seekers. And it made
seekers.
It made me think we could have put something up on the board, such as the loneliness of the human experience.
Yeah, you're born alone and you die alone, Amanda.
That's what they say.
Jeez Louise.
Not only can you not take your things, but you can't take your partners or your friends.
Ooh, that's
or maybe that's what they were trying to do.
Well, we're on day four of a 2-week quarantine in Canada. Rebecca
it's
and I
dark.
Are now because I have a job here and it's you know what? The loneliness of the human experience is really, I'm really glad you're here and I'm really glad we get to do this podcast and I get to spend time with the beloved Alarmy and talking to you guys because the loneliness of the human experience is, it's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah. And imagine that, need or that desire to seek and when one is lonely and having that compounded by internet trolling. Which it sounds like that's what was happening to them. They were putting themselves out there. They were going onto these sites or these message boards that were for like-minded people, people who like Star Trek, and they were putting out their ideas and they were being totally rejected and being made fun of.
The internet's been mean for a long time.
I would say since its inception.
Well, don't forget Zuck, our old buddy Zuck, Mark Zuckerberg. The Facebook started out as hotornot.com.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I have a lot of feelings about him.
I did jot down while he was talking about their relationship with the internet. I wrote down, the desperation for new members reminds me of trying to get people to rate and review this podcast.
No matter
we'll
what
get
you
get, like one or two.
No matter what you do, how many flyers you send.
I'm about ready to, you know, log off.
Log off.
Make your exit? No.
No, and actually, that being said, we since the last time we did the desperate plea, we did get a handful of really nice reviews. So thank you to everyone who took the time. And if you didn't take the time, I'll just remind you, it's not too late.
Nothing's going to stop you. Amanda, no. You're the battery.
Yes,
you're,
you are the battery.
You're the T. What is she again?
T. She's T.
Yeah, you're the T.
You're the T. Battery.
You are.
You're right. You're the T. I'm the dough, and Chris is the
I'm
dough
just
dough.
Fa. No, no, I'm fa.
You're the guy who requested to be castrated.
I just can't control my urges. Gosh, that's gotta be tough. I mean, that seemed like a really interesting element of this whole thing. And you know what the other thing too was that you also called out to Amanda, which was that we were all feeling, but you called it out, Amanda, was the sympathy for these people or empathy of for these people who just seemed like, you know, mild-mannered, you know, yeah. People who just wanted some answers. They wanted some sense of community and they wanted some answers. They weren't out to do any harm or anything like that. And that's what's so sort of compelling and so sad about the story.
It is sad. I do feel, I'm glad we talked to Dr. Zeller because he really brings out like the compassion that is really necessary when looking at these, you know, these people who were just, you know, they felt out of place and we're just seeking community and connection. And, you know, I will say it's a complicated matter because I can't imagine being in the shoes of the families who lost loved ones because of this, you know, organization that, you know, they felt took them away, you know.
I understand. And it's like, it's just hard. In this case, I feel like even the two people at the top were true believers. And so it's when you put it side by side with a Waco or a Nexium or some of these other cults that really there were distinct like victims and persecutors. It's not clear cut like that with Heaven's Gate. And if anything, like they were a family and this was a group decision that sort of evolved. Because this was a group, like he was saying, there was only one new member. Most of them had been together since the 1970s. So I think in a lot of ways, their sort of manifesto was almost like evolved and everyone had a little input in it. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but that's why, I mean, personally, I'm feeling a little bit sad about sending Doe and T to jail. And he talked a lot about conspiratorial thinking, which is so relevant right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is.
And what he said was true, that the, you know, they fell for this conspiracy theory. Like their lane of conspiracy theory is so different than today's, what's happening today, where it feels much more violent and angry. You know, for them, it was like, you know, UFOs and like possible life outside of this earth.
But still look at the outcome. Like so many people died. It's just, I don't know. I feel like conspiracy theories, especially right now, are just really deserve some sort of punishment.
They really are dangerous in my view.
And I liked what he said, conspiratorial thinking, because that's the mindset that allows someone to, you know, just ignore facts.
Yes, and I think that's what we were searching for in a way, because we kept saying the conspiracy theorist. It wasn't like conspiracy theory. Mm. And it's not the conspiracy theorist like we had up on the board. I think it's conspiratorial thinking.
Yeah.
I still think that at the end of the day, even though they were true believers, I still think they led a group of people to accept, you know, that this kind of, you know, I don't know, as a leader, you want to make sure everyone is okay. And I know that in their mind, they were thinking, you know, Doe was thinking that they were going to be okay. This was the best thing for them. But
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If he wasn't there and he wasn't leading them, then I don't know where they would be, right?
But they might still be after here. They exited, the members continued to exit.
The other ones.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the, yes, the so group of nine that we think should have left.
I'm saying after they had killed themselves, the members who didn't take part in that initial round for years afterward were continuing to kill themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Doe wasn't like twisting their arm.
Here's what I think. I think that we should, this might get a little messy, but tell me what you think. I think we should send conspiratorial thinking to jail and give Doe and T the big slap. And the Bible gets away with it once again.
I mean, listen.
The freaking Revelations 11.
Well, shout out also to, and I'm leaning that way too, because I'm pretty sick of conspiratorial thinking at this point. I'm sick of hearing about QAnon. I'm sick of hearing about these people who just don't accept facts as facts. So I'm well into putting conspiratorial thinking in prison. But I also wanted to give a shout out to, he mentioned Hal Lindsey, the late great Planet Earth, which I didn't know about that, and I have to like look into that a little bit more. But apparently, it's a type of Bible study which applies the Bible to events that take place in real life. Is that what he was saying?
Yeah.
Well, I looked it up. It was a guy, right? And so he was basically, I don't know. We'll have to look into it a little bit more. He's a Christian Zionist and a dispensish. Oh my gosh, this word.
Dispensationalist?
What does that mean?
It's almost like castration, the word I couldn't think of.
That was a great moment.
I was like, maybe I am a prude. While it was happening, I was like, I think I am a prude.
You couldn't get it out.
I guess it's like, okay, so certain parts of the Bible are meant to be applied to certain times in history.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like certain concept. Principles are meant for certain times in history, I guess it's like.
I mean, yeah, look in more to that. That sounds like there's some other disaster wrapped up in that.
But what do you think about, I'm sure a lot of disasters are wrapped up in that. What do you think about this new verdict? Chris, I think you're game.
Yeah, I'm on board. I'm so sick of the conspiratorial thinking. It's because to me, and I haven't really formulated this thought yet, but like to me, like, okay, it's one thing to challenge ideas, and okay, you watch TV or you watch the news, and yeah, you believe it, but you take it with a grain of salt. It's like, whatever happened to just taking things with a grain of salt? Okay, like maybe that's not entirely true, or maybe that reporter got a few things wrong, or like maybe there's a few things wrong about this. But to deny facts and to go on and press forward and forward until you are fully satisfied with all the right answers, well, that's just certainty on the other end. So I'm not saying accept everything you hear as true, okay? Because don't do that either. But the other end of that is don't stop until everything you believe you know everything. Like, that's what's fucked up about conspiratorial thinking. Yeah. Is like reframing events so that they fit your whatever you want to hear.
Yeah, well, and that's what, in a way, that's what cults have been doing with this... particular book of the Bible.
Yeah, and so it is kind of hard to let. I mean, I would want to send conspiratorial thinking to jail and let the slap sit where it is on the Book of Revelation,
the Bible.
Yeah,
but then we're not.
We're letting off dough and tea.
I just feel like they weren't gaining anything. Like financially or like ego wise by this exit. I like that's the only reason why I don't.
It's interesting.
Except for perhaps, and I don't know, this is all speculation. We don't know what they were thinking, obviously, but there's a part of me that can't stop thinking about perhaps he wanted to leave, whether it was his ego that like he knew the UFO wasn't coming, or he felt like he was going to get caught at a certain point where he couldn't continue this charade, essentially, of him being one of these prophets, where he wanted to end it. And perhaps he was afraid to do it alone. And perhaps that's why he brought along other people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's definitely true, and deep down they all felt that way, everyone in that group. But that's kind of how I feel, of like they all maybe deep down thought, like, let's just grab onto this opportunity with the Hale-Bopp comet.
It's true. I take your point where it's not like it was forced on them. I mean, of course, you could say there was peer pressure.
Yeah, but and I do think that was true.
Yeah, but it wasn't forced on it like perhaps some other, you know, like Waco or, you know, these other cults that thrive on the violence that the leader, you know, these people are scared.
But there wasn't, you know, that level of coercion.
No.
Look, no. Maybe a few days, because we recorded our original episode a few days ago, so maybe a few days in the alarmist prison did some good for Doe and T. It shook some sense into them. And, you know, maybe they'll come out of there and they'll be like, you know what, we got to straighten out, okay?
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's just my opinion. So, yeah. Rebecca, I do defer to you, and I actually think they're all really good options. But
okay.
So I'll let, obviously, you make.
No, I understand.
I'm going to let you do your thing.
I'm definitely.
Got to let her do her thing.
I got to let both of you do your things.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Amanda. Okay. I think I'm going to call it. And I think the slap remains. I think the slap remains. And I agree with you both. I think conspiratorial thinking, you're going to the alarmist jail. Yeah. All right, you're free. Dough and tea, you're free.
You guys have somebody to come pick you up? Because there's not a bus stop here for miles.
They've got a UFO, Chris. Come on.
Oh. They got the Hale-Bopp. Coming to pick you up.
Yeah, when does that come back by again? Like another,
I don't know, 4,000 years? It's a long time.
I'll grab them on my way. I got to go run some errands.
You got to go.
I'll pick them up and run
some errands.
I'll drive them around.
You guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. And, you know, thank you to Dr. Zeller. And Of course, you're going to want to tune in next week because we are covering the 2013 DACA garment factory collapse. Now, this was recommended so that we could finally get the fashion industry in the alarmist jail.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.